Today, we're honoring the power of women to rise up and be counted in our villages, families, and countries. My sister, Charlene Waynes, has made it her life mission to help one large orphaned family in Malawi, and her love and compassion for their lives and their thriving are the center of her day and her everyday actions. And we're joined today also by my colleague, Melissa Dealey. She's also out on the West Coast, so we have two from BC. And she's someone very passionate about her calling to help women and girls thrive. Their messages and understanding of the challenges of women in third world countries are critical for us to know and understand. And if we do not know the challenges faced by women around the world, we cannot stand up and be heard and to find a way for all women and girls to be mattering, to matter and to be thriving. And also we need to know how simple it can be for us to take action and to actually make a difference. And a difference that's bigger than we probably can imagine. So you heard our guest, Melissa, on an earlier podcast this year. She's an award-winning author and podcaster for the Don't Wait for Your Wake-Up Call show. And her real true value is her one-on-one sessions with people to get them moving forward with their wellness plan and identifying the habits and patterns that they have been set to go past with stress signals in the body. She's an integrative mind-body health practitioner, and she's trained in NLP and timeline therapy and is a hypnotherapy teacher. She's dedicated to helping her clients discover the root cause of their health issues and truly healing while detoxing their physical, mental, and emotional bodies. How did she find herself creating a foundation for girls and women and leading a cause? This is what we're going to find out today. So this podcast is a little bit different. So Charlene and I usually come in and talk a little bit about the Moyo family. But today, Charlene's going to take away the interview and she's going to share back and forth. They're going to share the knowledge that they both share in how they do their fundraising. You're listening to Be Well with Michelle Greenwell. This is sponsored by the Cape Breton Tea Company and Dance Debut Inc. And I'd like you to welcome Melissa Dealey and Charlene Waynes to the show. Thank you so much for both of you being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Thanks, Michelle. It's good to be back again.
So to get started, so everybody has the opportunity to have a healing and a balance just by listening to the podcast, I love how these cards always come together. So I pulled from the card deck, from the Affirmations for the Body and Biofield deck, which is on my website. And I'm just showing the front cover for those on the podcast that are listening because there's a mother and child in a ribbon representation on the front of the cover. And I always like to bring that in because we are talking about mothers and we're talking about children. We're talking about women and nurturing. And so I just wanted to bring that little powerhouse forward. And then I'm just going to hold up the picture for today, which is it's blacks, browns, whites, and it's almost like a kind of a shield in the center of it. And this is from the Meeting the Divine deck. So weaving through our spine and kissing each chakra, this energy flow connects us to the auric field, so our biofield, and the brilliance of resonance. Be open to receive the expansion it provides and the intuition. And this represents gold kundalini. So how the energy goes up and down the spine, gold kundalini is a radiating piece for us. So that's what we're bringing to the conversation today, which is really interesting. And Melissa, what have you got for tea today?
Today I am drinking Zen tea by Tazo. So it's a green tea with, I don't actually know all the ingredients in addition to the green tea base, but I absolutely love it. And I just thought it would be nice to have some Zen time. And I'm drinking it in my grateful mug. Awesome. Because I'm so grateful for my life and all that I have and for all the people in my life. And it's wonderful to drink it out of that mug. And I had to turn it around for you. But of course, every time I lift it to my mouth, I see grateful and am reminded to be in gratitude.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And Charlene, what have you got today?
I have, not surprisingly, our the Cape Breton Tea Company's community, which is our fundraising tea for our family in Malawi. And as usual, it Smells amazing. I love, for me, it's always the orange and citrusy tones that come out the most, whether that's the ones that I need. I don't know, because other people seem to get other tones out of it. But I love the color. It's a beautiful red. We happen to be recording this before Remembrance Day. So for me, the red tones also stand out right now for the poppy and Lest We Forget and the people that we should remember and recognize, and that allow us here in Canada to be able to do things like this and have our freedom to speak and to reflect and to be able to express ourselves in ways that people right now aren't able to, and people who are fighting to be able to be free and to be able to live peacefully, because we have that ability where a lot of people don't. And that's, I think, very prominent right now to know that. So to me, that's what it's representing today, not just the family and the fundraiser, but a bigger meeting of community worldwide. So that's my drink today.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. I also have the community tea in my dance debut mug today. But I was looking at the relationship. I've been doing the relationships of the different herbs. And so what I focused on today actually was the rooibos, the red bush rooibos, and combine that with the heather flowers. And when you put the two together, it's about a celebration of community, but it's about finding the way to come from yourself. If you've been more focused on who you are, and allow you to come out of that and to reach to other people. And for some people who might be lonely, these two ingredients actually provide a way for you to take that one step forward to try something new, to meet with a new group, to agree to go to a new event, even if it's just a trip to the grocery store or the library. But it's that opportunity to connect outside. And when you connect with other people, how your interaction might be changing somebody else's day. And certainly we all change because of the interactions, but sometimes we don't realize just because we smiled at someone, that might have been all they needed today to feel good to go home. So that's what the heather flower and the rooibos does, which I am fascinated by. So cheers, and thank you very much for coming to have this discussion today.
Cheers to everyone. And gratitude.
Thank you for gratitude. Oh, beautiful. All right. So Charlene's going to take over the floor, and I'm going to sit back and relax, and I look forward to what comes into the discussion, and I'll pick it up at the end. Take it away.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. And Melissa, it's so nice to meet you. We haven't met face to face, but I think that's part of the world now, that we can be brought together in ways that no one could have imagined 50 or 100 years ago. So it's nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too. And I totally agree, and have had the good fortune this year to travel to actually meet people that I'd only ever known on Zoom for the last 2 or 3 years and meet them in person. And even though we can have lovely hugs and lovely friendships on Zoom, it's wonderful to also have those in-person hugs eventually. And you're not that far away, so maybe that's sooner than later.
That's true. We are close together. That would be nice. And Michelle told me a little bit about your organization, but I would love to learn more. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got to become involved in women's needs and the needs of women and children in particular.
Sure. So it started about 10 years ago now. I am a Girl Guide leader, and my oldest is 25. So I've been a Girl Guide leader for 20 years. And that particular March, we took the girls, it was, International Women's Day. And what we did was take the girls to see a documentary called Girls Rising. And it was shown at our local library. And as I watched that documentary, and I don't know if either of you have watched it, but if not, you can find the trailer online. And just the 2 minutes of that trailer will give you enough to know the power of this documentary. I can't watch that trailer without getting tears in my eyes, even though I've seen it hundreds of times, and you can actually find it on our website. So I took the girls to this documentary, and as they interviewed these girls from all over the world that were fighting for the right to go to school and being denied simply because of their gender, I had tears in my eyes, running down my face, in fact, as I realized that I was sitting in a room of 20 young girls, all of whom took their education for granted, my two daughters included, and I realized I had two. Each and every one of us at some point had begged not to go to school, had faked sickness so we didn't have to go to school. And yet, on the other side of the world, there was all of these girls being denied the right simply because they were a girl. And that broke my heart. And I realized I wanted to do something to change that. I had no idea what it was going to be, how I was going to do that. But it just kind of lit a fire in me that I needed to do something. And so I had no idea how to start, and I just kind of sat on it. And about 4 years later, I'd been let go from my corporate career. I'd moved into health and wellness. I was doing a lot of personal growth, and I was at a conference where somebody, the speaker, said that we are all put on this earth for three things: to never stop learning, to find our passion, and to be of service. And he said, and you don't have to know how to do that. You just have to know your why. And that resonated with me, all of that. And I also realized I knew my why, and I had no idea of the how. But what I realized, if I just started talking about it, the answers would come. And I left that conference, and I called the only two people I knew in BC that had a nonprofit. And I said, will you teach me how to start a nonprofit? And they said, what do you want to do? And I told them, I want to keep girls in school, to stop teenage marriages, and to allow them to stand on their own two feet so that they're not forever dependent and enslaved to a husband. And they said, we want to do that with you. Why don't you piggyback on the nonprofit we already have, which was providing preschools education to children in Uganda and Nepal? Because the schools were so overcrowded, they built the preschools so that the kids would actually learn their ABCs and their 1, 2, 3 sooner. So when they got into elementary school, they could actually hold their own. So they already had staff on the ground. They had teachers. So it was beautiful because I was literally able to launch my nonprofit within weeks of having that conversation, because the three of us became co-founders, and they showed me how I had to fill out the forms and the BC Societies Act and all of that. They already had the staff and the groundwork. So we just launched. And that's the beautiful thing about this, is we're not sitting here in Canada deciding what we think they need or what they should have over there. We're working with the people in the villages, having them let us know what it is that they need, because we truly don't know. We don't live their life. Even if we've been there, we've traveled there, we've seen it, it still doesn't give us the right to choose what they need. We want to hear it from them, and then we help to fundraise and support. And it's been an incredible journey.
And I think that's part of the, that's an important part of the piece, is the empowerment, that it's not a dictation of here's what you need and we'll hand it to you, but including them in the whole discussion and the development.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And we just had our AGM this past week, and it's actually been really amazing to see the growth, because we started off just working with the teaching staff to figure out, okay, which girls needed support of having their educational fees paid for a year. And we would try to support the girls through high school. And we were small. It was literally just the three of us doing this, right? And we've now morphed into a place where we're helping girls through high school and university or some kind of tertiary education. We have two girls graduating in December, one from university and one who's learned to be a seamstress.
Nice.
We have another girl graduating from university next June, and we had another girl graduate from university about 2 years ago. But all the other girls that we're supporting through high school, we're re-supporting into university or some kind of skill.
Right.
And now what we're seeing is we're continuing to develop how we support the girls. Is this year we added menstrual supplies for the first time. They'd asked for that before, but we only had so many resources. And then this year, when they came back and asked again, we were in a better position to be able to fund that. And so I know we'll talk about that a little bit more, but what we've also now moved into is looking at how we can support the girls once they finish university or their skill education in getting themselves established. So for instance, the girl who's a seamstress is asking for us to give her money to buy her sewing machine and an overlock machine. And she's made beautiful work. She sent us videos of some of the clothing that she's made and the bags and her own graduation gown. And it's so all beautiful work. But of course, she needs the tools to be able to then, you know, build a business for herself, right? And so what we talked about is how do we do this not as a gift, but we loan those funds to her so that she also knows that it's, we're not just giving it to her and then she can blow it off if she decides she doesn't want to do it. It's a loan. You have to pay it back. But the money doesn't come back to us in Canada. It'll go to supporting another girl going through school. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at how we can make that happen as well. So, you know, in the span, we launched in January of 2017. So it's coming up on 7 years. And in that time, we can already see the progression that we've had and how we're developing and evolving as we support the girls. And that's girls in Africa. We also want to be supporting girls in Nepal. We just haven't got there yet because we need to increase our fundraising to be able to do that, which we're also working on. So, and then we also are helping in the Philippines with a school because Megan, one of the co-founders, is from the Philippines. And we've been gathering books and school supplies to send to the Philippines to a school that's in a very rural area that was closed during COVID. And then all of their equipment and school supplies all had to be sent to other schools. And now they're reopening with nothing. And so they reached out to the Philippine consulate here in BC, and Megan's, you know, well known there. So they reached out to Megan, who reached out to me. So in Whistler, we have Whistler Community Services, and I contacted them. They get more books there than they know what to do with. And books are not allowed to be recycled in BC, so it can't go into paper recycling. So I said, are we able to collect books and then ship them to the Philippines? And that's what we've been doing for the last 4 months. So we've got our, you know, fingers in different areas, all under the realm of Girls Matter and predominantly focusing on girls. And I have been asked, and in fact, I was at a conference in Las Vegas recently that was talking about fundraising and philanthropic work. And the founder of that company, when we met in person for the first time, we knew each other, and he said, "Girls matter, but boys matter too." I said, "Yes, of course boys matter. And everywhere around the world, boys matter. But you can't say that about girls. And that's why we called this Girls Matter." And I also had a lady, when I first named it, a local lady, say to me, "Of course girls matter. Why would you call it that?" And I said, "Because you might think that coming from Canada. Yep. But you go travel to some of these other countries and you will see that girls don't matter yet." And that's the change we want to create, is we want all girls all over the world to matter. And also to have it that education is not a privilege, it's a right of every human.
And I think that's very important. And I think even, I think that's a little bit of an expression of some level of privilege in Canada, even to think that all girls matter, because there are and there have been different segments of our society here where that is, and perhaps whether it hasn't been, but it maybe still isn't the case, where girls are recognized as mattering. And we're seeing that coming out in different ways. You know, and you know, we see that the Highway of Tears and things.
Yes.
And we see that people don't step up and line that highway and recognize it, for example. Right. And you know, that's where women's lives have been lost. Mm-hmm. There's things like that where we said that isn't the case, and we see that there's women here who aren't able to afford their feminine products or those things that are taxed or whatever it might be, or it's quite a fight and a struggle to have those things recognized as essential items.
Yes,
and it's a real challenge.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is,
and to say that you know, this isn't something that we're, you know, it's not a want, you know, that it's a basic requirement.
Yes.
It's a human need and that type of thing. I'm interested in talking about funding sort of the small businesses for the women. That's something I've been involved in Canada and doing like a micro loan.
Yes.
Or like a nonprofit micro loan and having those circulate back and keep self-funding.
Right.
And there's empowerment in doing that too.
Absolutely. Empowerment and accountability at the same time. Right. And
yes.
That idea came to me exactly from microloans, which years ago I was involved in Kiva. And I don't know if you're aware of Kiva.org. That's where I first learned about microloans. And I would go in and I could select that I want to support women, and I could choose the industries, or I could, you know, I always wanted to help, you know, single moms typically is what it was coming down to. And I could choose the country, et cetera, et cetera. And then the loans would be repaid, and then I go and reloan it to someone else. And then I read the book, The International Bank of Bob. And that's written by a fellow who decided to, you know, fund Kiva loans and learn all about it. And he traveled to meet some of the people that he funded without telling them that he was one of the sponsors, but he wanted to go and see how this all worked and write about it. He'd previously written for Condé Nast, and, you know, the best hotels in the world would put him up and give him these massive gift baskets and take him out to dinner, wine and dine him, and da da da. And he was like, you know, in Saudi Arabia or somewhere in the Middle East, and he's like in this beautiful hotel, and then there was homeless people outside the hotel, and he took the basket down to give to them because he didn't even have time to eat it while he was there because they were wining and dining him all the time, right? And he just said, this world, it's so messed up. And so I really love the idea of microloans, and love that, you know, you're involved in that, and that's kind of where we're going in this way to support the girls to get started, because the education is important, but you have to then be able to do something with it to make a difference.
And the ones I was involved in were local in Canada, but they were only a $500 loan to help someone who was underprivileged and struggling and trying to get off of, at that time it was a social services, or what we called welfare at the time. This would be 25 years ago. And the board would mentor them on, yeah, just running a small business and getting them off, you know, off of just the mentality of not being worthy and not being valued.
Yeah. Right.
And taking pride in their work.
Yes.
And it was everything from home cleaning businesses to artwork to just, you know, making things, woodworking. It could be anything. It could be a product, it could be a service. Or like you've talked about having a sewing machine, and the family that I work with, who just had a visit from Grace Pads, a different organization. One of the things that Grace from Grace Pads did was talk with them about hopes and dreams. And it's something I've been trying to talk to them about. And it's so hard to make people who haven't had an opportunity to think beyond the critical stage that they're in.
Everyday survival, yeah.
Yeah, to consider hopes and dreams. But to hear them say, you know, someone wants to be a hairdresser. Someone wants to be a seamstress. You know, someone wants to be in agriculture, like, but learn more of the tools and learn more of the techniques, not just being out in the field and doing the same thing as everyone has done for years and years and generations, but to learn more of the modern knowledge and asking for what is it that we need to make that happen? What do we need? And they know they need capital. They know they need education. And it's the first glimmer of sort of that sparkle of, you know, expressing these hopes and saying, you know, is this something we could really do? And it's like, well, if we don't talk about it, no. If we talk about it, then we can start saying, what is it that we need for that? You know, where do you go? Where do we start?
Exactly.
So that's really exciting. You know, and hearing that there's other people and organizations who are reaching out and doing the same thing is exciting. And it's the interesting thing is no one has to invent the wheel. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. everybody can piggyback on the processes that everybody else has also done. And I think that's also exciting
Did with my friends. I literally piggybacked on what they already had in place. And the reason though that I wanted to start my own nonprofit and not just donate to another one, because in that time from when I first watched the documentary to when I actually launched, I was researching other organizations, but I was getting really frustrated because I couldn't find ones where all the money went to the girls. There's so many organizations where unfortunately a lot of the money gets tied up in paying really high wages to the people that are working in the organization. Or I see a lot of organizations, you know, like we donate to the Heart Foundation and then they send me address labels and Christmas cards. I don't want that. I want the money to go to the people I'm trying to give the money to. And so that was a huge requirement for me in launching Girls Matter, that the money is going to the girls. You're not going to get address labels or cards or whatever it is in return for your donation, because it's all going to the girls. However, what we do is when the girls are home for the school holidays, they always do videos and of thanks and videos of what they're doing and their classes and et cetera, et cetera. And we share those with the people that donate. So it's much more personable than getting address labels in the mail. And people really enjoy that.
So from the time that you started until now, how has your involvement changed? It sounds like you were very hands-on, boots on the ground, you know, ground floor work to begin with. Is that different now compared to where you began?
No, it's very similar, although now I have a board, which is lovely. So I have another lady who is in charge of fundraising, and she's been phenomenal. And she's also taught herself crypto over COVID. And so we've actually had some great successes with fundraising through crypto. And I know that, you know, may be new to some people and it's definitely outside the box thinking. However, we're small enough that we're able to do that. And we have had some great success. And then I have two other members of the board. So now we have a secretary who's awesome because she does all the minutes for us. And we're just about to launch a monthly newsletter. She's going to be helping me with that. And then another board member who's very well connected, and she always just has great ideas. For instance, when we started talking about these microloans, she said, well, we should have the girls write us a business plan. We should have them have a startup plan in place. And she has examples of those. So that's what we're going to be putting in place for the girls. And then she said, we really need an investor package now. So then I can go out to people I'm connected with who can actually choose to invest in this. And so now we're putting together information on all of the success stories that we've had over the years, even going back to before Girls Matter. But when we were just Malcolm and Megan, my co-founders, were dealing with the preschool and how that positively impacted the community. And then now how educating the girls is positively impacting the community, et cetera, et cetera. So that investors can take a look at this and go, you know, I see benefit in this and I want to support. And there's a lot of companies out there that do want to figure out a way to give back and they don't know how, but when they come across the opportunity that resonates with them, that's in alignment with their values, then they want to contribute. So, and the big bonus this year too has been that the CRA changed its laws. So now as a nonprofit, we can actually give tax receipts. So through my networking, I met a woman who runs the company GiveWise, and we were her pilot project for a nonprofit to be able to give tax receipts. So now when people donate on our website, they get an automatic tax receipt. And we could never do that before. So that's a really nice plus for people and for corporations. And what I also learned is that Americans are allowed to use Canadian tax receipts on their taxes. It doesn't work the other way around. But if we do have Americans contributing, they can use that tax receipt too, which is wonderful.
Nice. Yeah, that's definitely a change up or a jump up for the provincial nonprofit to not have to take that extra step of the federal registration for charitable. Because I think that's sort of a good
block. Yes, because I would never be able to turn Girls Matter into being a charitable organization in Canada because 100% of our funds go overseas and therefore the CRA is not interested in looking at us. They want us to have money, you know, in Canada, and it has to be a sizable amount. And at this time, we just aren't big enough to be fundraising for that many places all at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so have you personally gone over now to see some of the work in action? Or when is the last time you've gone to see some?
No, I actually have not been to Uganda or to Kenya to meet any of these girls yet. As we were talking before the podcast started, I have traveled through Africa, albeit back in 1990. I spent 2 months traveling through Africa. So I am aware of what the living conditions are like there. Through FaceTime and videos, I also get to see what it's like today for the girls. I haven't traveled there yet, and it is my intent. I want to go with either Malcolm and Megan, who have both been before. But that's another separate expense, because I don't charge that to Girls Matter. That's a personal expense if I'm going to go do that. And so I need to get to a place where I can afford to do that.
And how did the girls at the other end, how do they find you? Because often in some of these communities, they can be quite remote. How do they find that this opportunity exists for them?
So we are working in Uganda with one very small village called Buyaya, with the closest town is Soronko, and it's on the side of a mountain. So even getting there, like, the bus only goes so far, and then after that, they have to hike up the big mountain. We were just talking at our board meeting the other day that for the school, we purchased a bicycle, and the bicycles actually become an ambulance service as well as needed, because they can ride the bicycle down the hill and then, you know, get the rest of the way to the hospital. Whereas before, somebody would have had to walk down the hill to get somebody on a motorcycle to ride up the hill to then take them. But because we're working in such a small town and that's where the preschool is, the girls are all known to Mary and Esther, our staff and teachers on the ground. So they help us identify the girls that are in need, that have the academic aptitude, and that have the family support. And from there, they apply. And based on their applications, et cetera, we support as many girls as we can. It's not always everyone. However, as we continue to grow and put the word out there and have more fundraising, hopefully we can be supporting more girls. And as our crypto opportunities take off, which we're looking to that happening in 2024, hopefully that allows us to support some more girls. And then in Kenya, we work with an organization called the Jali Sisters, J-A-L-I Sisters. And I met the woman that runs Jali Sisters through a networking organization out of Arizona. And we connected and did a Zoom, and she lives in Nairobi, and she was supporting women in getting started in business and women of the slums. And that's what the Jali Sisters do. And she teaches them how to run a market kiosk or how to make gift cards. I actually have some beautiful gift cards here from them. Hang on, I can pull them out for you 1 second. Here's one of them.
Oh, beautiful.
So the women make these cards and then they sell them. And these are actually sold online as well, not just at the markets. And then she also has the women making menstrual, reusable, washable menstrual supplies. And when we connected, we wanted to support the girls of those women. So we're helping to fund the 18 girls in Kenya going to school, many of whom have actually, unfortunately, been raped as well. So they're trying to get their lives back together. And then she also has a preschool service so that the moms can be working while the kids are cared for. So it's kind of preschool to helping the girls in school and then the moms to run a business. And again, very often they're single moms that have come upon hard times and been mistreated themselves. And so Jali Sisters is doing what they can to support. And we're coming in and helping there as well.
I think there's a very different social bond as well. At least that's what I have learned in some of the communities in Malawi, or at least the community that I'm learning about, in terms of just the whole relationship between the family, the extended family, and the relationship and the willingness of people to take other people in. And other people to become family. So there may be an initial core family or nuclear family, and then someone is all of a sudden orphaned, and maybe that family takes them in. And, you know, it can kind of grow and snowball. And what was, you know, a family this size is now a family this size. And there's more and more people to look after, more and more people to support, more and more people to love.
Yes.
And to care for. And they're all considered family.
Yes.
So what would be a 10-person family is then a 12 or 14-person family. Then it's a 16 or 18-person family. There's maybe only been one or two babies born in the nuclear family, but the family's still bigger. And everybody's cared for. And there's a lot of generosity.
Yes.
Generosity that doesn't, I mean, here, we have generosity here, but it's generosity in a different sense. And I had an example of this when I let the Moyo family know that the people from Grace Pads, I had them, they'd said, oh, you know, they thought they were going to be close enough. It would only be another few hours that they could drive down and deliver the women's kits directly. And the first thing the Moyo family said was, well, we can all sleep outside. And they can have what, it's not really a house even, it's
right.
A destroyed structure, but they can have that. They can have the protection, we'll sleep on the ground. You know, all 22 or 23 of them.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, what we have, we will give. And
yes.
They're so willing to give to others when they have nothing.
Yes, and I agree 100%, and that's exactly what I see in the experience I know from my travels into those regions. Is, and I know Malcolm, when he tells stories of having gone to visit, that, you know, they have so little, and yet when he arrived to visit them, they gave him a chicken. And, you know, that chicken is incredibly valuable to them, right, for food, for eggs, everything else, and yet they gave him the chicken, and he said, I felt awful taking the chicken, but that I had to take the chicken because they wanted to give me the chicken. And there's that whole giving and receiving circle, right? So yes, they will literally give you the shirt off their back because they are so generous. There isn't competition amongst them. It is all about the community. It takes a village to raise a child, and it is beautiful in that respect. And it's interesting because I read a book last year. I'll have to think of what it's called. Living a Committed Life. Mm-hmm. And what she said in that book, Lynn Twist is the author. What she said in that book was when she saw, you know, what they didn't have, she wanted to help. And she knew some wealthy people in New York. But those wealthy people in New York weren't happy. These people here were happy. They didn't have, you know, three meals a day in a comfortable house on Fifth Avenue and all of that, but they were happy. And she just thought, what if I get these people that are super wealthy but unhappy to give money to support these people to raise the quality of their life? What does that do? And it was beautiful because these people from New York that were unhappy is because they were unfulfilled. And now, in supporting other people across the world, they became fulfilled, which gave them happiness and the quality of life of the people in whichever country in Africa she was in improved. And that's what I would love to see more of, is let's redistribute some of this wealth around the world, because money doesn't buy happiness, but money can improve quality of life so it doesn't have to be so hard.
Yeah.
For many people. And for other people, when you help others, that's actually what brings you happiness and joy, because it's giving you purpose. As opposed to, I need to buy another car, I need to buy another game, I need to have this, I need to have that to be happiness. That doesn't give us happiness. Helping humanity and supporting other people and having a purpose in your life is where we get our happiness from.
And I find it's more energizing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can be drained of energy and tired and end of the work day. But then you turn around to this other side of life, which is this more philanthropic, helping others side of, in whatever form you do it in. and could be another 3, 4, or 5 hours. Who knows? Could be a lot longer than that. Whatever Absolutely. The time frame is, you can lose yourself in it because yes. it is absolutely energetic and inspiring, and it lights you up. Even yes. as you're talking, your persona changes while you're talking.
Right.
And you know, you start to bubble, right?
Mm-hmm. Because it raises your frequency, which then just brings in that joy. And it just happens naturally when we allow ourselves to go there.
And I think, you know, part of what Michelle and I have talked about over the last number of months, you know, is, you know, how can people find that? And a lot of people, you know, if you start talking about it, you hear, I don't have time, I don't have the money, I don't have the energy, I'm too busy. There's a lot of objections. And yet at the same time, those people have, you know, they have a desire that they want this other thing in their life, you know, or they've got these pains, you know, they've got the sadness, they've got the illness, they have, you know, the financial problems, they have all of these things, you know, and it's not to say that doing this other thing will solve all of that, but it starts to change either your perception of them, or whether or not they're actually a problem.
Exactly.
Some cases, it's not, you know, I'm not a wealthy person, but in helping others, I'm not any less financially wealthy, even though I've given, somehow it happens. And it's not that I have
to be also wealthy in a completely different way.
Yes. And you don't have to give a lot, but you find workarounds, you find ways to do things. And it also starts to make you question, do I really need to buy that? Does it really matter?
Yes. I was just going to say exactly that, because for instance, I know you work with Grace Pads in Uganda. We work with the Ugandan Rotary, because Rotary has actually been a great supporter of Girls Matter, and their Interact Youth program had youth here in Whistler fundraising to support one of our girls through school, which was amazing. So our youth could see how people lived in another place, right? So what we decided to do for our menstrual pad supplies was to go through the Rotary, which had a factory on the ground in Uganda, which meant we were again helping the Ugandan economy, helping people in Uganda have jobs, and they delivered them to our village of Buyaya. And for $10, we can supply a girl with her reusable menstrual pads for a year of school. So she doesn't miss a week of school every month, because if they don't have the pads, they do miss a week of school, right? Imagine having your cycle and not having anything and having to stay home because you can't go anywhere because you've got no supplies. That's their reality. And so by supplying the village with pads, we supplied them with pads for 1 year, and then we need to keep doing that. We're supporting the Ugandan economy, we're supporting employers, and we're keeping the girls in school. And it's literally $10 Canadian for somebody to donate to support one girl.
Yeah.
How much does a cup of, you know, I like a chai tea latte from Starbucks every once in a while. When I was first introduced to them, they were about $3. They're now almost $7. I have them maybe once a month because $7 is a lot. But how many people are going to Starbucks once or twice a day or dropping $10 there without even thinking about it? And what if you just chose one day a week not to do that and contribute to keeping a girl in school every week of the month?
Exactly.
How much of a difference would that be? Because we've all just been through a pandemic. We've all just been, you know, in physical distancing and told to stay home. Did you like it? Mm-hmm. No. But that's their reality. 1 week of every month of every year. And for $10, you can change that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the point too, you know, some people will say, well, you know what, here's some stuff. Why don't you ship it to them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could, but I try to avoid that. I have sent them a couple packages with some Canadian things just of interest to the family, just to share a little bit of what we have here. But for the most part, I don't ship them things because of the very things that you talked about. Because if I just send them something, if I sent them notebooks and crayons and pencils and papers from here, that doesn't help the person in the market
there.
In Malawi who sells exactly. those things.
Exactly.
And that's not supporting or helping that. You know, so if I'm sending funds or have raised funds to help keep the kids in school, then we want to be able to help purchase those supplies in Malawi so that there's other people and other families, you know, who run those services that are also going to be supported. So it's not just, you know, sending a box of those things.
Exactly.
And ensuring that there's a bigger picture of the community.
Exactly. So in Kenya, we send the funds to the Jolly Sisters, and then they use the funds to buy the raw materials to make the reusable washable pads. And then it's the mums that I mentioned earlier from the slums that are making them for the girls. So we're employing them, they're getting paid, et cetera, et cetera. But and I
that's
do want
what to say, pads does as well is it's all of the pads are made in Malawi.
Well, that's
and
awesome.
Distribute them and do a whole education piece about yes. women's health and empowerment, and really trying to help them understand that they can be something as yes. well. Sorry, I cut you off there as well.
That's okay. I was just going back to earlier in our conversation when I said we're sending books to the Philippines. And yeah. that's different because the books we're sending are in English. And that's what they're asking for in very remote areas where they don't have access to English books. But right. they want to teach the kids English. And so that's why sending those books over isn't negatively impacting anybody's potential income there. And we yeah. are solving a problem that they've asked us to help solve. So, yeah.
And that's a balance, because I know in Malawi too, say their school, often in a classroom, there can be 50 or 60 students in one classroom.
Yes.
The teacher has one book.
Yes, exactly.
And that's all that the government provides. And they can't purchase that book anywhere else. So if we had that, the same resource that the teacher was using, that wouldn't be taking away necessarily from that. So it is a balance between, you know, what do they have there and what don't they? But it's a long conversation, and it can take days or weeks or longer back and forth in between time zones and cultural sensitivity and learning back and forth to go through all of that and really understand to make sure that what we're doing is appropriate and that we're understanding the right thing, you know, and if at different times there were things that just completely are not available there, then it would be a purchase. We purchased hippo rollers. It's about 5 or 6 years ago now. So those actually would be at their end of life according to the lifespan of a hippo roller. But that's something that wasn't available anywhere there and had to be shipped up from Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, different than something that could be locally
sourced. Purchased. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
How are we doing, Michelle? Are we? I don't know if I've kept up on time or
I'm
not.
I'm just enthralled.
The problem is I could just keep talking.
I'm just thinking about there's, you know, you are two powerful women who took an idea and just went with it, like. Who does that? You know, lots of people will have an idea and then they'll just put it to the side, but you actually thought about it, found a way to implement and then bring it forward. And then it has a life of its own, right? It's grown. It's so amazing to hear both of your stories. I'm curious as you have visions of where you want to go. And I know you've seen that far and you're working towards that. But if you were to go to the wish list of more than that, what might that be? So Melissa, with some of the things that maybe is on the horizon, what are you seeing?
I would like to see this become self-sustaining in the countries that we're working in now, Kenya and Uganda, and I also want to expand into Nepal. They're asking for our help as well. And one of the things that's launching in January 2024, it's just starting now, is again, it's in the crypto world, but it's an program called Get Fit, and you earn money by moving your body, by taking steps, by exercising, by sleeping, because that's good for your health too. So what's really cool is the woman who's founded this did really well with Bitcoin. She's a multimillionaire. She wants to redistribute the wealth around the world and help reduce the chronic illness in the world. And she figured, how do we get people off the pay them to move? And so this is really cool because it's already available in Africa. We just need to, what she's working on, because I met her in Las Vegas. She loves what we're doing. She's willing to gift the NFTs to our girls so that they can start working and earning their tokens. What we need to do is get from the bands, like I have an Apple Watch. They obviously don't have an Apple Watch. So the company has bands. So she's willing to gift the bands to the girls. But what she didn't realize is the girls don't have smartphones. Even though there's more phones on the planet than there are toilets, they're still on flip phones in the community. And the girls often don't have phones. So she's trying to figure out a way to get from the band directly to a computer, because they do have access to computers, so that it can track their movement and earn their tokens. And then as they walk, and we know they all walk so far every single day, they're earning, right? And then that also gives them pride, because they can see how they're earning. It can then be contributing towards their education. So it's a really interesting opportunity. And I would love to see it get to a place where this is all self-sustainable. And we really are distributing wealth around the world. And they have a lot more control over it than they've ever had until now. So that's really exciting.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And doing for the girls, doing something they're already doing. So it's not adding to them.
But exactly.
It's certainly worthwhile for them.
Exactly. And to that as well, what the organizer, her name's Lynette, what she envisions is also things like walkathons, right? They're great fundraisers. I've done walkathon fundraisers for Girl Guides. But now we could do walkathon fundraisers that are global. And you can send that out to anyone in the world, and they just need their band and they just need their NFT set up. And then for each fundraiser, maybe they choose to walk, but 80% goes to Girls Matter and they keep 20%. And so it's just an interesting way of being able to expand the fundraising opportunities and making it global, instead of just doing a walkathon in your small little community with 20 people. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And Charlene, for you, you're working in a different capacity. So with what you have on the horizon, I know we've talked about the having the cement bricks to be able to have permanent housing rather than things that get washed away. What are you seeing?
I think very much it's something that there's so many people in the world that don't have just the basic necessities, like the access to clean water with, you know, is so essential. And when you don't have the water, you don't have health, you know, and there's so much that gets tied into that, you know, so the shelter and water. And once you have those things secured, that helps to start to secure your food source. And when any of those fail, all of a sudden, illness creeps in. When the illness creeps in the developing worlds, they don't have access to the same healthcare or medical at all. And then that crisis hits, and there's such a risk, whether it's the maternal health, the baby's health. There's a lot of orphans because parents have died of HIV, AIDS, a lot of other illnesses, but things that here now we really don't hear about so much, but there's so many there where we hear that. And you know, in a family where you've got, you know, two dozen people living under one roof, one person gets tuberculosis or gets the mumps or gets malaria. And that's a critical crisis for the family. And what may be $50 or $100 worth of medication, they don't have. And you may be looking at at fatalities, multiple fatalities in the family. So having that secured housing and having access to clean water, it's unimaginable that there's people in, you know, we've got people buying multiple cars in, you know, and all of these recreation toys, and how many vacations in a year, and how many more, you know, fashion shoes and whether it's purses or coats, or like so much extravagance in the world. And there's people who don't have water, don't have a clean toilet, can't wash their hands after the toilet. Just the basics. I mean, it's humanity. So many people have pets that are taken so much better care of than hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in the world. And that just, you know, it breaks your heart. And when you, if you spend too much time about it, it breaks your heart. So for me, it's this one family that for whatever reason, in my heart and mind, God connected me to, and they are truly my other family. But they're just one example to be able to show the world that it is possible for one person to make a difference. Mm-hmm. So
that's beautiful.
People do, yeah.
Have you had a chance to go over and meet them in Malawi?
No, and you know, unfortunately, the person that I first connected with, Stephen, died of COVID 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, the father in the family, him and I were, he was like a best friend to me. So I was devastated, like it was a brother that I lost.
Mm.
And now it's the rest of his family who's still alive. But, you know, I've named children in their family. It's just amazing. Yeah. Gifts, yeah, that they extend. And the crazy thing is you get as much back.
Oh, yes.
I mean, more.
Yes.
Their first questions are always, how are we? Mm-hmm. You know, what's happening in our family? You know, for Michelle and I, our mom had cataract surgery yesterday morning. And she has 23 or 24 people in Malawi praying for her well-being to make sure she's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got, I don't know how many messages that I haven't answered yet after work today to let them know how she is, you know, because they care so much what's happening with us. Even though they have incredible crisis, we have this great healthcare system. Our mom is doing so well. A day after the surgery, she's had her second checkup, things that won't happen for them there.
Right.
Their first concern is, how are we? How is she doing? You know, how's grandma?
Yeah.
You know, they're just so full of love and caring.
Yes. Yeah.
So I want to make sure that they're looked after, and I want to make sure other people like them are looked after, because,
yeah,
I mean, it's not the things around you that matter. It's the people and the love.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. What you were saying earlier about the conditions they live in reminds me, I read Ken Follett books and I love his books. I've read all of them and I just finished another one last night, and such amazing stories about, you know, Middle England and the Dark Ages in England and times of the Black Plague. And then this most recent book ended in, I think, like the year 1825. And as I read those books and that history and time, and, you know, really involve myself in what life was like back then, and then what you're explaining life is like now for people, and that I know firsthand as well, it really is like going back several hundred years in time.
Mm-hmm.
For us. And, you know, as I read those books, I'm thinking, I didn't live in that time. And yet in our world today, some people are living in that time. It's,
yeah,
very similar conditions. Absolutely. 200 or 300 years ago. So,
yeah.
Beautiful. Well, I think we easily could do another podcast with an update for people, because as they start to get into this story and hear more, I know they're going to be wanting to find out what's happening. So, Melissa, I hope you'll be able to come and join us again, and as you've launched your things into 2024, be able to bring back what's next.
I'd absolutely love to. Thank you for having me today. Yeah. And I would like to come back.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm excited to now go look up all these things you talked about. And how, I don't know if I'm sure you'll ask Michelle, how can we, you know, look up and learn more about Melissa's work.
Yeah. Melissa, what would you like to bring forward for a contact for people?
So our website is girlsmatter.ca. And if people are called to, they can go and donate there and get their tax receipt right away. If they would like to sponsor a girl, we do have several girls looking for sponsorship right now. One girl has been accepted into pharmaceutical studies in her area, and we are looking for a sponsor for her for a 3-year university degree. It's about $1,850 Canadian dollars per year for everything, her board, her food, her transportation, her studies, her books, everything. And we also have a couple of girls in high school that are looking for sponsorship, and that's about $2,000 a year. Again, it's boarding school, so that includes everything. And if somebody just wants to email me because they're interested in learning more or they would like to sponsor a girl, the email address is info@girlsmatter.ca.
Beautiful. Thank you, Melissa, for that part. And Charlene, do you want to just share a little bit about how to reach out for your project?
For us, we have our community on sale through Cape Breton Tea Company. And Michelle, you'll have the link.
Yeah, it'll be in the notes. Yeah.
And you have that available if you're on the East Coast in Cape Breton area. Michelle has supplies of that. I have supplies of that in the Kelowna area. And if you're anywhere else in Canada, we are more than happy to ship it to you so that you can bless someone else for Christmas with this amazing tea. And by blessing them, you will absolutely bless this family that we help and support. If you're local in West Kelowna, my community in Westview Village is having our Christmas craft market on December. Oh, I should have looked it up. It's the first Saturday in December.
December 2nd.
Thank you. Right in Westview Village. So I'll have a booth with Mom there as well, selling the tea if you just want to stop in and pick some up then. It'll be available then. You can message me through Facebook. And we also have our Stephen Moyo's Mission for Change GoFundMe. That's a general fundraiser just to help support with the medical costs, the overall education costs for the family. All of the women and girls in the family now have grace pads, which is amazing. So they're now looked after for 18 months. And with all the washing supplies, the underwear, the grace pads, you name it, to cover them for the next 18 months. So they're thrilled. So now we're looking at, again, you know, other needs for the family. And if those are covered, then working towards building their home again.
Perfect.
So the link for that will also be below.
Thank you. That's perfect. Great. So to finish off and get people that have been listening and maybe they've been sitting, get them moving so they can move forward and make some changes themselves. And I think that the Rooibos and the Heather Flowers did their job today in showcasing how outreach and compassion really works. So Melissa, what's something that you enjoy doing that just gets you moving?
Turning on my favorite music and just dancing it out.
Awesome.
Sounds like a Grey's Anatomy fan. Yeah.
I've never watched Grey's Anatomy in my life, but
they dance stuff out on that show all the time.
Okay. My kids have both watched it multiple times over, but music has always moved me. And so when it comes on and it's music I like, I move to it.
Perfect. And Charlene, for you?
Well, we're big music fans here too. So the variety of music that we have here, I need to get back to my ukulele practice. And I've been working on learning to be the backup trainee for sitting Tai Chi. So I enjoy the Tai Chi classes.
Perfect. Nice. Thank you. And in our Tai Chi class here over the summer, we had two harpists that played for us. And it was so magical. And so now when we're in class, it is so incredibly quiet. So what I've been doing is actually calling music into my head. So instead of actually turning on a song and dancing in the kitchen, which I also will do, I've actually been trying to pull that forward, which is really interesting because then you have to feel the music. And I've also, it's harp, so you're not going to have lyrics necessarily right. to sing to, but you certainly can start to feel what that music is. And it's really changed the way I think about music and how it impacts my Tai Chi practice. So, yeah. Awesome. Ladies, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your wonderful wisdom and for the work that you're doing in the world. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to share with others. And it's lovely to meet you, Charlene, and thank you for the work that you're doing.
And you as well, Melissa. This has been great. And thanks, Michelle. I'm sure we'll catch up again. And nice to meet you. I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. I look forward to it.
Definitely.
So season 3, we're looking at transformations and how people do make changes. And we have different publications that we release through the month. So I usually talk about some of the techniques and the things that I'm working on at the beginning of the month. And then I have interviews that I do within the middle. And then Charlene and I always finish at the end to bring back in what's happening and how we can be living compassionately. And so this has been a lovely way to celebrate this part of the podcast. So thank you for listening, and we wish you well. Take care.